This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Bill O'Brien met with the media yesterday and made a point that, hey, the Ravens, different challenge than what we faced heading into our opener against Kansas City.
These offenses are very unique, in many ways, like our offense. You know, you have to – the Ravens' offense is very different than the Chiefs. There's absolutely no comparison to what they do. They just use different personnel. They run, you know, totally different types of plays. Lamar's excellent player. Ingram, the back. I mean, Hollywood Brown, the tight ends. You know, they've got a lot of weapons, good offensive line. So, like I said, we're going to have a great week. Our scout team's going to have to do a great job of giving a really good look. And, we're going to really have to, you know, play a very disciplined game. We weren't disciplined enough on defense on Thursday night. We have to be more disciplined and play a more disciplined game.
I always chuckle at that. Like, okay, Alex Magoo, you're Lamar Jackson. Go.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you usually have one of your speedier young guys, one of the wide receivers, right. Play Lamar Jackson. Because that's the hardest thing about playing Lamar Jackson is that on any given week, I can turn on a Ravens game, and I can see a defense play Lamar Jackson exactly the right way and still get gashed.
Yeah.
Like, they'll be in the right spots, they'll be watching, they'll be paying attention to their responsibilities, and they'll still get gashed against the run because he's just so fast. But then the really bad part is that when you're focused so hard on trying to stop the Lamar Jackson runs that you abdicate or forget or get sloppy on the back end with your coverages, then all of a sudden guys are running free and Lamar Jackson's throwing touchdown bombs. So it's really hard, man, and it's so much like when Colin Kaepernick, Russell Wilson, RG3 took the league by storm in 2011.
Yep.
and with the read options, except that this time there's not as much of an element of surprise. It's the element of surprise is how fast Lamar Jackson is. The scheme itself isn't anything that you really haven't seen with Colin Kaepernick or anybody else before. It's that, man, Lamar Jackson just does it with so much more speed and so much more viciousness that it's impossible to defend at times.
Speed, viciousness, and crazy elusiveness. Seth, he's got that one move where he's able to just stop on a dime, almost stand up straight, and let the traffic go by. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, he's got a guy closing in on him who has an angle on him, and he's able to stop and just let the guy go right by. Stop and just stand up straight. And it was funny, last night, Jerry Jeudy, who is a wide receiver for the Broncos, I think most people know, played at Alabama, was a first-round pick for the Broncos. He did the exact same thing, and as I'm watching it in the game last night, he caught a slant and stopped the same way Lamar Jackson did and let somebody go by. And as I'm watching that, I'm going, because I just got done watching the Ravens and the Browns game a couple hours before, and I'm going, that was the Lamar Jackson move right there. And right on cue, who was doing that game, that was the Levy, Lewis Riddick, Brian Greasy crew doing that game. And I think it was Levy who was on play-by-play saying he's from the same hometown as Lamar Jackson, and they used to work on their moves together in the park with each other. I'm like, okay, well, no wonder. They sat out there clowning all the neighborhood kids with that little stop move that they have and just watching all the traffic go right by them.
Well, you know, and it's one of those things that's like, it's a really good idea, and maybe you'd have it. Like, I had that idea when I was a freshman running back in high school. Didn't work so hot. I think I based mine on Top Gun, the movie, where, you know, the Joker realized, like, hold on a second, I'm just going to hit the brakes, and those Soviets are going to fly right back. Yeah. Didn't work so much because I didn't quite have the same athleticism as Lamar Jackson.
Or a jet airliner, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, or that. I also didn't have
fighter,
that.
Fighter jet.
The other thing that, like one thing the Ravens are doing that's really cool, I saw this weekend when I watched them play, which is, again, just the way the Ravens and Greg Roman, their offensive coordinator, have of just genuinely taking a quarterback's athleticism and saying, hey, how can we use this in ways that haven't been used before? There was a play in the game where the pocket was collapsing. Lamar Jackson was kind of getting enveloped by the pocket. And in that quiet stadium where you could hear everything, I kept listening to hear if Lamar Jackson made a voice call or something. They didn't, but just out of nowhere, the three offensive linemen to the left, the tackle, the guard, and the center, just start jetting towards the sideline, blocking for him like it's a screen or a running back, a called run or something. It was after the play had broken down. I'm guessing Lamar says something, and boom, those three linemen all make to the sideline and turned into either, if Lamar had chosen to run, then he could have run, but also because they had a few yards before the offensive lineman got to the line of scrimmage, it bought time for a tight end to get open downfield, and he completed a pass. And it's one of those things, it's kind of like, it's like it was with a back shoulder throw where you realize, like, wait, how come it took so long for the NFL to realize that a back shoulder throw is a good idea?
Mm-hmm.
This, I'm watching this, and I can't remember seeing this coordinated scramble blocking by the offensive line before.
Mid-play.
And yet they put that in for Lamar Jackson.
Yeah. Mid-play. So you're saying there may be a call on the field or some sort of code word or a dummy word that Lamar Jackson says, and even though the – because you're right, I saw the play. You tweeted the play. The linemen's backs are all to Lamar Jackson. None of them turned around to look and go, okay, scrambling to the left. They all just automatically started moving to the left in a cohesive effort.
Yeah, it was like, okay, you know, you see some offenses and you'll see after the offensive line blocks for a while, a couple of the guys will just get tired and stop blocking and then look around and be like, oh, there's my quarterback. Yeah. I'm a big, dumb offensive lineman.
Right.
I was too fat and slow to play D-line. So, it's like, there's none of that. Like, no, this play is still going on. So in a coordinated effort, they all start moving towards the sideline.
It's crazy.
Like it's a called play or something.
Yeah.
It's just really, really cool.
Yeah, well coached, no doubt about it. Does Anthony Weaver have the hardest job of anybody in the building this week? I know the job on Sunday is going to be hard for the guys on the field, obviously. But as far as the prep leading up, O'Brien just outlined there, Seth, these are two offenses that, first of all, they're the two best offenses in football. But secondly, they could not be more different. Thirdly, you're playing them in back-to-back weeks. Does Anthony Weaver, and this is Anthony Weaver's second week on the job, basically.
Yeah, and this is where I think the Titans last year, if you want to talk about a former Texans defensive coordinator, Mike Vrabel, his team did a really good job in their playoff victory versus the Ravens last year. I think first and foremost because they were very disciplined. They had a game plan, and they executed that game plan well and how they were going to handle Lamar Jackson. And this is the important thing to remember. Lots of teams will have tried this, but few can actually pull it off. They said, all right, we're not going to give Lamar Jackson an open gate. We're not going to give him an opportunity where he can hit the C gap at full speed and just get 15 yards before anybody touches him. We're going to make him run laterally. We're going to push him to the sideline because he can make plays while he's on the run, running towards the sideline. He can make plays with his arms, but that's not his forte. He's not as good at it as, say, a Pat Mahomes is or a Deshaun Watson even. So that's what they did. But then the other key is you got to be really disciplined with your edge guys, with your outside linebackers. You got to be really smart. And again, Lamar Jackson's going to get his yards, but don't make it easy for him. It takes a lot of discipline to do that. And the Titans did it really, really well. And that was one of the big keys to them actually pulling that victory off, was just playing with extreme discipline up front.
So along those lines then, what is the snap count look like, if you will, among the linebackers? And I'm not saying give me specific percentages, but if that's the game plan they're going to execute, stylistically, what's the personnel going to look like more often than not in the front seven, both along the defensive line and in the linebacking crew? Does that mean we're getting more, Merciless rarely leaves the field, but does that mean we're seeing more Brennan Scarlett than Jacob Martin in this game on the other side?
Does
it mean we're seeing more of, you know, maybe more PJ Hall, less Ross Blacklock because he's a rookie, that kind of thing? I don't know. What does the personnel look like? In your mind, Seth, if you're Anthony Weaver, who are the optimal personnel to execute what it is you're talking about?
I think more of a conventional 3-4 defense where you've got to have big guys up front that can help stop the run. I think that the Texans experimented last week, or they had to try to stop the run when they were in their nickel defense just to match up with the Chiefs in the passing game, and it was really hard for them to do that. And they mix and matched a little bit and had a little bit of some more unconventional personnel groupings at times. I don't think you can do that versus the Ravens. And Weaver has to make some tough choices at this point because he just doesn't have a good natural pass rush. Maybe Amenihue becomes the guy. Maybe Jacob Martin does, but I don't think you can put Jacob Martin in this game with what a liability he tends to be at times versus the run. I don't think he's going to end up being the guy that helps limit Lamar Jackson. You got to just flat out win physical battles in a way that you weren't doing in the game versus the Chiefs. That's the really hard predicament you're in right now as the Texans defense. There is no scheme that you can do versus Lamar Jackson where all of a sudden you're going to out-clever what they can do. They've just got too many ways to beat you physically. You've got to win some physical battles in the trenches at some point.
They played mostly nickel and dime against the Chiefs, and the Chiefs were able to gash them in the run. Conventional wisdom would say you don't do that against the Ravens, although very famously a couple of years ago in the playoffs, it was thought that the Chargers gave everybody the blueprint on how to beat Lamar Jackson and the Ravens when they played 7 defensive backs in a playoff game in Baltimore, and they were able to beat them. One of them was Jahleel Adai, who wound up playing for the Texans the next year. So everybody was thinking, well, that's what you're going to do. You're going to throw those 7 defensive backs out there. Turns out the league didn't really solve Lamar Jackson after that rookie year. He went on to be the MVP of the entire league last year. I'm looking, Seth, at the snap counts for the Chiefs game. These are the guys that never left the field pretty much in the Chiefs game. Zach Cunningham, Bradley Roby, Eric Murray. They all played on special teams, too, because they played over 100% of the snaps, according to Pro Football Reference. J.J. Watt didn't come off of the field. Whitney Mercilus played 99% of the snaps. Bernardrick McKinney, maybe this is part of the problem, played 89% of the snaps against the Chiefs. And then Charles Amenihue, Vernon Hargraves, both 70%. Brandon Dunn, 67%. Everybody else was below 50%. So those are the guys didn't really leave the field very much.
Sometimes it's you can dice that up too much because part of it is who are the personnel that you're trying to match up to on the other side of the ball. You know, if the other team comes out in 3 wide receivers, you have to be in nickel at least or dime. Like, you can't go out there with your base defense. So it's you're partly just at the mercy of what the offense is doing there. I think that if you go back to that Chargers strategy, for one, Lamar Jackson was a rookie. He'd only been starting for a couple weeks at that point. But also, one of those defensive backs on the field for the Chargers was Derwin James.
Good point.
There's a certain level of athleticism and skill there that when you put guys that are freakish out there, then you can do that. Who are the freaks on the Texans defense right now? I don't know. Is there a Derwin James caliber athlete on the Texans defense right now?
Boy, I don't think so.
No,
peak J.J. Watt for a guy his size, but he's not peak J.J. Watt anymore.
Yeah, but look, I'm not trying to paint all doom and gloom here. I think that there's the Titans were not the best team in the league last year, and that they beat the team that looked like the best team in the league, the Baltimore Ravens. And a lot of it is just flat out winning in the trenches, winning the turnover battle. And the biggest one, and this is the one I know it's going to sound stupid. It sounds so plain and simple, but bear with me. I was one of the first people to say, look, this notion that the Ravens aren't going to be as good when they have to play from behind is stupid. Turns out I was dumb, and it was correct, that the Ravens don't play as well when they play from behind because they are so run-oriented. And frankly, I think the Ravens should have just stuck with the run longer than they did in that game, even after they got down. But when the Titans got up, to an early lead. I think Lamar Jackson pressed a little bit. He had a couple of bad turnovers, like turnovers where it looked like he was pressing. But then also, they closed out the game in a conventional fashion. They ran Derrick Henry over and over and over again and limited the number of opportunities Lamar Jackson had. So, yeah, this would be a good game to get a fast start and jump out to an early lead.
The analytics always say defer if you win the toss because it means you could get an extra possession. Seth, I think if you win the toss, you got to put Deshaun Watson on the field, right? You've got to take the ball.
Yeah, I think in this particular, scenario, and given that, look, in the NFL at least, Lamar Jackson just doesn't have a whole lot of experience with playing from behind either. That might be one of your best shots.
You got to go try to get a lead. I 100% agree with you on that. All right, we roll on here in the 9 o'clock hour on Payne and Pendergast. Trevor Lawrence announced his intentions this weekend. Not a big surprise. He will be going pro after the season. So, how many teams are in the mix to tank for Trevor? Easy for me to say. That's next.
That's the same thing, pretty much. You could tank.
So one of the bits of news that kind of flew under the radar this weekend because it was the first weekend of the NFL season and there was actual football being played in the college level and the ACC and the Big 12 were a little over a week away from the SEC starting up. Well, who knows? We may get news on the Big 10 in the next day or two. They may have a season coming up starting in October. But and maybe it's because this is really a fait accompli. Everybody knew this was coming. But Trevor Lawrence, Seth, did an interview with Tom Rinaldi of ESPN over the weekend, and he said, quote, "I'm graduating in December, planning on this being my last year." So he's not waiting. He's making sure everybody knows, not a big surprise, that the 2021 NFL draft will indeed be the Trevor Lawrence sweepstakes. From what you've seen of Trevor Lawrence, is he somebody who's deserving of this generational attention? That he's getting Andrew Luck type attention. You know, this is a guy who they've been targeting for like 2 or 3 years now as a guy who's going to be a number one pick in a draft.
Yeah, I think that sometimes you got to remember and realize how much they look at traits when they start talking about who's a slam dunk pick. Like Clowney, and I first learned to just accept this with Clowney because it was the weirdest thing where they would scouts talk about how, yeah, okay, there's certain things in the performance that you don't like, but you have to understand that the traits are so ridiculous. The speed, the height, the size, all of that stuff. And it always, my counter to that is always like, well, yeah, if he had those traits and yet the performance wasn't exactly what you think those traits should translate into in college, like, why is it going to be different when he's facing grown men every week?
Yeah.
And I like Clowney. I'm not saying like a Clowney was a bust or anything. I just, there's something about just finding that rare physical talent and ability that I think that Trevor Lawrence has enough of those things.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's interesting. One of the things that people wonder a little bit about is that he's really tall, and there aren't a lot of really tall quarterbacks, 6'7" and above, that have made it in the NFL. There's an extra level of difficulty in wrangling those big limbs around and getting rid of the ball quickly.
Yeah, I think what tantalizes people about Lawrence is, one, his leadership skills. Obviously, he was a true freshman. He led Clemson to the national championship, but he's a really good athlete. You know, a lot of those 6 foot seven guys, we had one of them here in Houston for a year. You know, a lot of them are 6 foot seven and gangly and not very athletic. He is 6 foot seven.
Joe Flacco.
Joe Flacco's 6'7" and he's a statue. Trevor Lawrence is 6'7" and he runs like he's 6'2". You know, I mean, he's very, very athletic for his size. So Seth, I went through the standings and I said, okay, everybody's like tank for Trevor. How many teams are really in the mix to either tank to get the number one pick or give whoever has the number one pick a king's ransom to move up and get Trevor Lawrence? You know, how many teams? Because so many teams are already committed to a guy. They've either drafted a guy in the last couple of years or they're under a long-term deal with a veteran quarterback. And I've got six teams total.
Okay.
Do you want to? Do you want me to rapid fire them at you and see if you see if they pass the smell test for
you?
Yeah. Okay. The Jags are the obvious one. The Jags are thought to be tanking for the number one overall pick.
No, the Jags are going to screw this up. They're going to be like Miami was last year. I think their quarterback is going to give them too many wins. I think Gardner Minshew. I don't know what Gardner Minshew will be as a quarterback, but he's the classic kind of Ryan Fitzpatrick quarterback who's capable of delivering you a few wins a year that a lot of other quarterbacks wouldn't. I'd say, you know, Case Keenum in some regards is like this, that he's the worst guy. Like, he doesn't, he's not the guy that you want to be your starter, but man, he's got a scrappiness to him, and he's got like this, that natural football playing it factor that he's gonna charisma his way to a few wins every year. So I don't think the Jaguars, as long as Gardner Minshew is their quarterback, they're doomed to winning at least six football games.
My next four are all teams that have taken a quarterback within the last two drafts. Yeah, two? No, three. Within the last three drafts. The Jets. Sam Darnold is not the guy.
No, Sam Darnold's not the guy.
And they might end up being the worst team in football this year. They very well could.
Are Cardinals fans still convinced? Excuse me. Are Jets fans still convincing themselves that they're that Sam Darnold is the guy?
I don't know. I haven't listened to him on radio up there. I'm not sure.
He makes some really nice throws, but I also there was at least one throw that he made in that game versus the Bills this weekend where I thought, oh, he did what young quarterbacks shouldn't do, is he watched Pat Mahomes play football on Thursday. You can't look, if you're Pat Mahomes, you can't get away with throwing across your body as you're running to the left against the grain of the defense. Look, if you're a young quarterback, listen to me. This is the same thing as like watching a porn video. There are certain things that you see that are not meant for real life. You're not supposed to try everything you see on that video the same way you're not supposed to try everything you watch Pat Mahomes do. Sam Darnold's going to be out there next week trying a no-look pass or something.
I really don't like how you're out here crushing all these kids' hopes and dreams in the bedroom, quite honestly.
I'm not crushing their hopes and dreams. I'm helping them out. I'm saying there's certain things you might see on video that, like, no. You have to have a discussion first before you try that.
Not physical traits.
Yeah, no,
not
no,
physically
no, no.
able is, to do, like yeah. socially able to do. Yeah, I got you.
Yeah. No, no, no. I would say physically, though, too. Yeah, all of that. There's certain things that go on in those videos that aren't – that's not real life, okay?
Right. Gotcha.
And that's the same thing that goes with a Pat Mahomes.
Really good advice. Really good advice. Yeah, thank you. Yeah. The Cleveland Browns, they are ready to move on from Baker Mayfield in Cleveland. I know because I listened to 92.3 The Fan yesterday. Boom.
No, Baker Mayfield, there's still too much potential in him. Look, you got to settle down after one game. That roster has so much talent. And by the way, Odell Beckham Jr. dropped, what, five times? He had five drops in that game?
Did he?
Three of them, like, pretty easy ones? Yeah.
He had at least a couple easy ones. I know that.
He had three drops. I think, what did he have, five catches on 10 targets? It wasn't a great game. Now, five of them were poorly thrown balls. Give Baker Mayfield a little bit of time to work with Kevin Stefanski. Kevin Stefanski, I will say this the same way it happened, like, in a Kyle Shanahan / Gary Kubiak offense. There's a little bit of a learning curve, but then all of a sudden, one day, the quarterback gets it. It's the same way it happened with Matt Ryan. It really took a full year with Matt Ryan and Kyle Shanahan in Atlanta for it to start working. I think give it a little bit. I think up in Green Bay, it took a little while for Aaron Rodgers to figure out exactly what LaFleur wanted him to do in that system, and now it looks like it might be catching on. So I'd say Baker Mayfield needs at least a full year in that style of play before you can really drop the hammer on him. He was so good his rookie year. You gotta give it some time.
Okay, my next one that could tank for Trevor Lawrence. It makes sense to tank for Trevor Lawrence, and this is going to sound a little counterintuitive because he just used the sixth pick in the draft on a quarterback. The Chargers of Los Angeles.
So they would end up being like the Cardinals and just giving up on a first-round quarterback?
Yes.
No, because what you're going to give up? No, because then you'd be giving up on that quarterback before you even got a chance to see anything out of him.
He's Trevor Unless Lawrence, he's they need box office in Los Angeles. They need to put fans in the stands. He gets people way more excited than Justin Herbert, who they might be able to move for a pick.
He would put fans in the stands. Boy, do you make that decision based on that? Because you also want to try to put fans in the stands this year, I'm guessing.
Is anybody excited about Justin Herbert in Los Angeles when you're in the same city at the Rams?
Nobody's excited about Justin Herbert. But I also think, I guess this is, I'm skeptical enough of any quarterback taken high. And it's never, you know, it's easy for people right now to say, oh, well, everybody knew Pat Mahomes was going to be awesome. No, Pat Mahomes was my favorite quarterback in that draft. There were a lot of question marks about how well he'd adapt to the NFL.
He was a 10th pick. There were nine teams that didn't think he was good enough to take, you know, theoretically.
Yeah, so The allure of a number one overall quarterback to me just isn't the same as what it once was. So if I've just taken a guy in the first round, I gotta at least play it out with him and see where we are.
The Washington football team.
Oh.
They just took Dwayne Haskins with the 15th pick last year. Haskins is 1-0 so far this year.
And Haskins, I think Haskins kind of quietly had a better season than people realize over the course of the second half of last season.
Yep.
Just because he was in such a cesspool. I think that one incident that he had where he was doing selfies with the fans weighed way too heavily in people's evaluations.
Yeah, I bring it up all the time. So
yeah, because that's the only thing you would really remember. Nobody was watching the Washington football team over the second half of last season. No, I'm still going to ride it out with Dwayne Haskins.
You are, okay.
I guess what we're really coming to here is that I'm not as in love with Trevor Lawrence as everybody
else
is.
Well, or you're not as ready to flush a young quarterback down the toilet as I might be, you know, or as the league might be.
Especially, Sean, look around the league right now and see where all of your, a lot of your great quarterbacks came from. They didn't come from the number one or number two or number three overall best pick in the draft.
Yeah.
So it's sometimes it's a little bit of a fool's errand to operate on this 1990s logic of you absolutely have to have a guy in the top three if you want to have a good quarterback.
Last one, the Chicago Bears.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
but except you can't trust current management to do it, right? I think if you're going to tank, you got to trust current management to almost inadvertently tank for Trevor Lawrence. But then these are the guys that gave Nick Foles a boatload of money.
Yeah.
These are the guys that just chose Mitchell Trubisky over Pat Mahomes and Deshaun Watson. So, yeah, I don't think you can trust this regime to be the guys to handle Trevor Lawrence the right way after you tank for him.
Someone texts in, the Lions could be interesting. They've got the potential to be there to take him and might be time to move on from Stafford and fully rebuild. If the Lions have a season where they go 3-13, and whether it's Stafford healthy or Stafford not healthy, if he's not healthy, that's two straight years that he's not been healthy. It would make sense to take a quarterback. If he's healthy and they go 3-13, then it really makes sense to move on from the head coach, the general manager, the quarterback, and just start fresh all over again.
You know what they need to do too, Sean? They need to really – I haven't seen a team ballsy enough yet to really hire a tanking football coach. Mm. One of the problems is they hire these coaches that are somewhat competent. Even if they're not good, they're somewhat competent. You got to go hire like a Jim Tomsula type, which maybe that was the plan all along, wasn't it? That Jim Tomsula was the head coach that year. Did they hire Jim Harbaugh immediately after Jim Tomsula and the 49ers?
Yeah. Chip Kelly came after Jim Harbaugh. Yeah, they hired Jim Harbaugh right after Tomsula, yes.
Okay. So I don't even know if that was the plan at the time because they actually liked Jim Tomsula. He's a hell of a guy. He's an awesome guy. He's just not a head football coach.
God, did you remember
that? So, I think the Lions need to fire Patricia and then, hire some – hire some guy that's got he's a high school football coach and he's not even good in high school.
Right.
I'm not saying you hire like one of these Art Briles types that was an awesome high school football coach. Yeah. I'm saying you go hire the worst high school football coach out there and have him run your team.
It's a good plan. All right. Up next, Seth, guess what? The first set of power rankings that we get irrationally angry at are out. We'll take a look at those. And maybe overreact to what the Texans' schedule is shaping up like as well. You're listening to Payne and Pendergast, Sports Radio 610. So ESPN put out their first set of power rankings week one. 1 week into the season, and the congratulations, New York Jets. You are 32nd. You are the worst team in football, according to ESPN's totally subjective power rankings, 1 week into the season. They fall all the way from 27 to 32. You do?
I do, Sean, and bear with me for a second, because remember that most Jets fans, I don't think most Jets fans are Yankees fans. I think that, aren't they kind of aligned with,
yes,
aren't Mets fans? Yeah, like Mets fans and are Jets fans,
yep,
and Yankees fans are Giants fans.
Generally, that's Giants how the Venn diagram goes, generally speaking, yes.
And Giants and Yankees fans feel kind of superior, like, these are the old venerated, they feel like they have a birthright to greatness or something. Yeah, they're more annoying. Jets fans are long beleaguered, and they kind of have an inferiority complex about stuff because their team's been such a joke, despite having some stabs at greatness there in the Rex Ryan era.
Yeah,
you know,
close.
Yeah.
close.
Yeah.
So the Jets are 32nd, and Seth, as I'm looking at this, and I promise you, audience, I'm not counting backwards from 32 all the way up to one. We will be making a point with this here in just a second.
I'm not opposed to it. That would fill out the segment. Yeah.
Did you want to? Okay, we'll do like case to case.
Let's just
moving up.
Let's just tread water
here.
Yeah. I don't feel like working anymore.
But in looking at the very bottom of the rankings here, not the very bottom, but close to it, I missed one team that would definitely be in the tank for Trevor conversation that you and I had in the previous segment. Number 30 in the power rankings after 1 week, and I thought this team actually looked okay in week one. I mean, they lost at home to the Raiders, but it was a fun game to watch. The Carolina Panthers at 30, that is a team that is, A, I think going to be bad this year, and B, would make a lot of sense to draft Trevor Lawrence if they could, in large part because you would fill that stadium with Clemson fans buying PSLs and buying everything. Once you're allowed to put fans back in these stadiums, the stadiums would be full of Clemson fans there to watch Trevor Lawrence. It would be like if Deshaun Watson had gotten drafted by the Panthers. That would have been absolutely somebody that fan base would have gotten behind.
You know, I was actually on with Mark Ryan, who used to be on our station here in Houston, but now he's in the Carolina area. They call it upstate, which I think is like the Raleigh-Durham era area. I'm not sure. But whatever. But they talk a lot of Carolina Panthers. And one of his listeners is a big Clemson fan who just wondered whether Deshaun Watson just doesn't have what it takes to make it as an NFL player. And then I realized, okay, a lot of Panthers fans would also be Clemson fans, and what they saw of Deshaun last year was that Carolina game where Deshaun had a really, really bad game. If you watched Deshaun Watson in the Carolina Panthers game last year, and that was the only time you watched him, you might think, like, this is a guy that's just not making it in the NFL.
Yep.
So I had to reassure the entire North and South Carolina region that their chosen one was indeed doing okay.
Yeah, he's
as long as he just –
$40 million a year. Like, there's somebody out there that thinks he's going to be all right, you know?
Yeah,
I think the question becomes, you know, is he going to make it as an NFL quarterback, and is he going to be the man? Are two different questions. Like, is Deshaun going to be a guy who's going to be in the NFL for a number of years, win a lot of games, and put up a lot of numbers? Hell yes, he will. Is he going to be a guy who aspires to be legendary? That's his word. Is he going to be legendary? And the jury's absolutely still out on that when he's won one playoff game. Now, granted, he single-handedly won that playoff game for the Texans. He went out and won it and made the plays that won that game. But he's got a lot of work to do to even get into that conversation. So he's got the tools to do it. I think the question is, does he have the supporting cast, the head coach, the general manager, the longevity, things like that to do it? Those are all questions that remain to be answered. The Texans are 19th in the first set of power rankings, Seth. 19th in the NFL, down three big notches from 16th the previous week.
I'll take that right now. I can't get angry. What am I gonna do? Sit here and act like, oh no, don't you understand? The Texans are the team of destiny. You can't put them at 19 just because they got absolutely humiliated on a national television in your only sample size this year. Of course, that's where they should belong. Frankly, I'm a little. This is the first time I'm going to be upset with a power ranking for not putting the Texans lower than where they are. I want them to feel
angry.
Like they actually. They have to understand how far they have to climb up to dig themselves out of this, which is fine, which I believe they're capable of doing. But right this moment, I'm fine with 19.
And, of course, the power rankings, especially this early in the season, are always a combination of body of work plus what your potential is. I mean, that's exactly what it is. No power ranking has more baked into it in terms of potential than the one in week one. You've only played one game. Of the teams below them, they're 19th here on the ESPN power rankings. The teams below them that actually played better than them in week one, I feel like they're better than all these teams. Like, Chicago played better than the Texans in week one. The Texans are better than the Bears. We'll find out. They play each other later. The Chargers won their game. They beat the Bengals. The Texans are better than the Chargers, I feel like. The Washington football team, it is a pretty fearsome pass rush that they have. It was a pretty impressive win over the Eagles. The Texans are better than Washington. Who else played better? The Jacksonville
Jaguars. I don't know if the Texans are better than Washington.
Really?
Chase Young. I don't know if the Texans have a potential playmaker like Chase Young. Yeah.
No, I don't think they do either, but I think they're going to be much better. I mean, Washington started all of their drives inside the Eagle 40 in that game. They didn't have to drive down the field. Washington's offense is still abjectly horrible. And I don't think the Texans have a horrible. I think the Texans are going to have a good offense this year, ultimately. But that's fair enough. No, that's why I pointed out, Seth, before I dismissed the Washington football team, having watched that game, that is, I mean, they're doing some things on the defensive side of the ball on that team. There's no question about that. That is a that teams will know they've been in a street fight with a team. Washington's not going to be the pushover that they've been the last couple of years, defensively at least.
Yeah, I think that, I guess I would say, how do you know the Texans are better than the Redskins?
All I'm saying is I think they're going to be better. How do I know? Oh, okay. I don't know anything. They've played one game. I just think they're a better football team.
I don't know what the Texans' defense is. I mean, they were a bad defense over the second half of last year. You have to remember that they didn't do anything to get better on defense. Am I missing something? What did they do to get better on defense? They drafted a couple guys.
They promoted. They promoted. These are the things they did on defense. You tell me if this made them better. I mean, they didn't They didn't do much to change the defense. Here are the things. This is from memory. These are the things that happened in the offseason for the Texans defensively. And Seth, you tell me if you add these things all up, are they a better defense? They were 27th in DVOA last year. They promoted Anthony Weaver to defensive coordinator.
I think that could make a difference. Yes, that they could be better.
They let DJ Reader go.
No, that does not help
them. That does not help them.
Certainly, it really didn't help them versus Kansas City.
They drafted Ross Blacklock, Jonathan Grenard, and John Reed with their first three picks in the draft.
Yeah, that was I would say that's about what any other team would have done.
That's
so
a
I'd
jury
say no.
Still out. Yeah.
Yeah, that's like, okay, they got some kind of high draft picks, not first round picks, but yeah, we'll see how the draft picks work out. But that's what every team in the league did, you know.
They replaced Eric Murray, or they replaced Tashaun Gibson with Eric Murray.
They got worse on defense.
Okay.
There. Okay.
That's about it. They let Jonathan Joseph go. I don't think Jonathan Joseph was a healthy scratch at the end of last year. He misses leadership maybe, but I don't think that's a big impact as to what the product is on the field this season.
Yeah. And that's where I get I'm not sitting here trying to say that no, the Texans are awful. I'm more thinking that in terms of say what the Redskins did, including the fact that I think that their quarterback, I think Dwayne Haskins played better than people realize over the course of the second half of last season. That maybe the Redskins have a chance at. Boy, they're not going to be very good.
that's why this, Seth, where you were going with this, at first I'm like, man, does Seth think the Texans are going to be 6-10 this year? Because I think the Redskins have some good things going on, but I don't think they're going to be 6. I think they're going to be 5-11 at the end of the year.
Yeah, know? Yeah. So I was going to try to make a case for them. I've been kind of bipolar about the Texans during this show today. I feel like I've been up and down. I feel like I see an avenue for their improvement, and I feel like they could be way better like 3 weeks from now. But there are also a few moments where all of a sudden I just feel like all is lost. Yeah. The world is dark. It will be a permanent twilight here soon with the Texans. I'm trying to dig myself out of that part.
What I'm about to tell you is not going to help that, just so you know. If you're in a dark place, what I'm about to tell you as pertains to these ESPN power rankings is not going to put you in a better place, Seth. The Kansas City Chiefs are number one. The Texans have played them already to very little critical acclaim. The number two team on the board, the Baltimore Ravens. They play them this weekend. After that, their next five games before the bye week are against Pittsburgh, the 11th-ranked team, Minnesota, the 14th-ranked team, Jacksonville, the 27th-ranked team, Tennessee, the 8th-ranked team, and the Green Bay Packers, the 5th-ranked team. So they will have played five of the top 11 teams in football, according to these power rankings, by the time week 7 rolls around.
They've got a tough schedule ahead of them, my friends.
They do.
This is where I wonder if the Texans end up having that kind of season where they get written off early, and for good reason. If they struggle, if they don't like have some convincing upsets in these first few weeks, then they'll be written off, and then they'll do like we've seen Bill O'Brien do before, fight their way back through the second half of the season. And the problem with that is that for the most part, the verdict is already in the mind of the public. It's never as impressive when a team comes back and has a bunch of victories to get to 9-7. Like, it's not the Cinderella run that it'll be written about, like, you know, several months later. People just kind of check out on it, and they feel negative about it, and they feel down about it. And it might end up getting Bill O'Brien fired, even if they end up with a respectable, even if they win the damn division this year. But yeah, to start off, if they start off 1-4 or 1-5, man, that's tough to crawl out of that.
If they start out 2-5, if they're 2-5 by the bye week, which is 100% in play right now, I just listed, look, six of the teams they play are considered better football teams than the Texans. And when you play at home, you don't really have a home field advantage. There's no fans in the stands. Seth, if they start out 2-5, this ain't year 2 of the O'Brien era where he's trying to scrape two sticks together with Ryan Mallett and Brian Hoyer, and there's still a honeymoon period, and everybody still is kind of in on the Bill O'Brien thing. This is year seven with one of the thought to be one of the five or six best quarterbacks in all of football. You start out the year 2-5, there are going to be Texan fans rooting against the Texans the rest of the year so that there can be substantive change in the organization, so that there will be different people making the decisions on this stuff.
Well, and there is. I mean, once you've given your quarterback that $40 million a year contract, that's your decision right there. If Deshaun hasn't progressed this year to a guy that's worthy of that contract, it's not like you're getting rid of Deshaun anytime soon. At that point, it has to become, okay, we got to change the coach and the coordinator. Like, that's just, it's as simple as that. I don't think Cal McNair even has a decision to make at that point. I think the decision is made for him that, yeah, they take a step forward this year offensively, or you have the wrong general manager, head coach, and offensive coordinator, and you got to make some changes. I'll deliver that take on January 10th without even any passion. It'll just be a matter of fact statement, or at least, you know, we would get to December by that point, where it's just what you have to do.
Yeah, it's math. It's math at that point. Landry Locker jumps in the loop, starts at the top of the hour. What's happening, Landry?
What's up, guys? I said the same thing, Seth, yesterday. If this offensive line isn't good, then everybody has to be fired. And I'm not calling, like, if the receivers don't work out, you can get through it. But if the offensive line's not good, I think everyone needs to be fired. But I wanted to ask you a question specifically about the offense and if there is a blueprint laid out for the Texans, because it looked like the Chiefs were just keeping the receivers in front of them and making the Texans dink and dunk a little bit. Is it easier to stop speed in the NFL than we might think? Because we keep hearing about this receiver speed, but is it easier to stop speed than many people think?
No, I think it's easy to stop the deep stuff. It's really, really hard when you do that, though, to then stop all the underneath stuff and to stop the run. And that's where it was disappointing, because really what the Chiefs did to the Texans, it should have played right into the Texans' hands, because, hey, you've got Randall Cobb. Remember, you just gave him 3 years, $27 million, so that when teams decide to take away the deep ball, all this stuff underneath should open up. Your tight ends should feast. You should be able to run the ball really well. The only thing that really happened was that I think David Johnson had some opportunities for some nice runs, because he was going against six in the box at times. So I think that it's easier maybe than people would have you believe, Landry, but it's really hard to do that and still stop or limit a good offense. Look at what the Texans did to the Chiefs. The Texans wanted to take away the deep ball, and then they just got absolutely crushed underneath and with the run. And some of those long drives are because they took away the deep ball. So, yeah, it both is a little easier, but there are always consequences.
Landry, what's going on In the Loop tonight?
Man, we got a lot going on. I did some research on Bill O'Brien 2 weeks into to seasons, so we're going to have some fun trips down memory lane. John Lopez wrote a column, and my gosh, did he really have to lump Bill O'Brien in with Enron? I didn't think we were going to have this discussion.
What?
It happened, and we'll get into it at 10:20. We also got some production that I think you'll enjoy. And John McClain's going to join us to talk about the inability to stop the run, as well as the offensive line, which you guys have covered so well.
All right, good deal. Landry Locker, John Lopez, Figgy Fig, they are in the loop. I want to remind everybody real quick, if you want to go sign up, we're 1 week in. You can still sign up, though, the Rocket Mortgage 2020 Pro Football Pick'em. I'm in the contest along with several hosts from around the country. You can still win the $10,000 grand prize. You got to sign up at radio.com/picks. $1,000 weekly prize. Even if you didn't sign up week one, you can still win the $1,000 weekly prizes. No point spreads, no lineups, totally free to enter. You're just picking winners of games. Super, super easy. Compete with me and hosts all over the country. Radio.com/picks. Seth, antibodies to you, my friend.
Antibodies, T cells, and what were those things that you used to put on the steering wheel to prevent your car from being thieved?
I was going to say life lock. That's for identity theft.
The club. Get yourself one of those, too. Yeah. Give yourself a club.
All right. Sounds good. That's Seth Payne. I'm Sean Pendergast. We are Payne and Pendergast, and we are wishing antibodies to all of you. In the Loop is up next. Figgy Fig, John Lopez, Landry Locker. They've got you till 2 o'clock. Until then, we'll see you at 6 a.m. Have a great day, everybody.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.